Chapter 16. General Cutter. The Duchess's servants are up hours before dawn, readying for the day as their employers continue their slumber, blissfully unaware. To me, it's a racket to wake the dead. The clatter of silverware and porcelain are thunder in my skull. I can smell every rasher of bacon, boiled oat, and morning privy visit. Hear their coughs and quiet conversations, the endless splashing of water as basins and pitchers are filled and pots set over the fire. I'd be glad of the unnatural silence of the Duchess's library now, or even Grandad's coarse-born rooster crowing. Sunrise in Hollow is even worse than in Tibet's brook. I flee to the still quiet courtyard, comforted by the cloak of darkness, but I can feel the weight in the sky as dawn approaches. I flit through the yard unnoticed by the guards, just a shadow in the darkness. I find a familiar spot and scale the western watchtower. I've always been a good climber, but in darkness, I can cheat a bit. Same way I get slippery, I can turn sticky when I want, misting just enough to slide the skin of my fingers and toes into cracks and fissures, too small for most folk to see, then expanding to fill them. I climb like a spider above the guard's post to a small archery nook with shuttered views of the road and yard, just large enough for a single shooter. From the inside, it can only be accessed by a narrow winding stair. It's the shadiest spot in the yard and no one ever goes there. Used to come here all the time when I was little. I nestle into the darkness, closing my eyes and focusing on the quiet conversation of the guards below to help tune out the keep's rising bustle.
"You ain't heard where they're headed?"
one says. He's older, and I can hear his stomach rumbling as the end of his shift approaches. He smells of alcohol, but he isn't drunk. He chews sour leaf in an attempt to mask it on his breath.
"No one knows,"
his relief officer says. She's younger, freshly fed, and clean.
"Wherever they're going, one thing's for sure. Either the Duchess expects to find a fight, or she's looking to start one."
I don't have to wonder what they're talking about. The preparations have been underway for a week. Soon enough, the yard comes to life as well. Animals are led out and hitched, and the wagons loaded the night before ready themselves to leave. I can smell the chemicals and acrid scent of the three carts of flamework, another dozen laden with supplies. Two carts from the Warder's Guild and another of jongleurs. And that's not to mention all the men and women to cook meals, wash laundry, and otherwise facilitate for the convoy. Inside the carts, cooks are already peeling potatoes and chopping vegetables for a lunch stop that is hours away. I can feel the onion fumes on my eyes. 500 mounted Hollow Lancers atop giant Angerian Mustangs come up the road like a rock slide. So loud I need to stick fingers in my ears to blunt the worst of it. They muster at the gate in polished wooden armour, long spears upright like a forest in miniature. Even from atop the wall I can hear their words to one another, but the topic is the same. All they know is they are headed into the borderlands to hunt demons. Some are veterans from the Demon War, but others came of age long after and have never faced Quarlings in battle. The elders have a lot of advice, but as I learned for myself, little of it is useful without the perspective only a charging demon can give. Mam's been skating back and forth for a week, readying the children to join Hollow's forces at the edge of the borderlands. Aunt Leisha wasn't exaggerating when she said she was taking no chances.
"Spend a lot of time up here for a boy with two pretty princesses to keep him company."
Mam's head appears in the window. I'm not surprised. Mam can't dissipate with the sun up. She avoided the steps and climbed the wall quietly enough, but I could smell her coming.
"Nice shady spot,"
I say.
"Got a view of everything.
Ain't quiet, but ain't usually bothered here."
"Is that what I am to you?"
Mum slips her legs over the sill and sits in the window, uncaring of the 30-foot drop at her back.
Or can I sit a bit? Keep you company?
Worried I'll stow away in one of the carriages? I ask.
Should I be?
Mum replies.
No, I say.
Ain't interested in going to pick a fight with a mimic demon. Mam's nose is as sharp as mine, even when she can't see my aura. She knows I mean it.
Then what?
I shrug. Just feel so helpless sitting here. And I can't help but wonder. I trail off, but not quickly enough.
Already know what you mean, Darren,
Mam says.
Might as well just say it.
My voice hardens. If you're going in the wrong direction, don't want to go down to the old hive any more than you. But if there's a chance, Da is stuck there?
He ain't, Mam says.
He was. I'd already be down there. No matter what the ripping dice say, your Da was still alive? She lifts her left hand, running a thumb over the wards of her wedding band.
I'd know.
I want to believe her. I know I should. I don't doubt that Mam would do anything to bring back Da, short of putting me at risk, but there's a place where the two overlap, and that makes it hard to trust.
Would you really have gone into the court with him, if not for me? I ask.
Would have gone anywhere to be with your Da, Mam says.
Loved Arlen Bales like crops love rain. Didn't think I could live without him.
She lays a hand on my shoulder.
But then I met you and realised I had more to live for than I thought.
My throat tightens, but I force the words out anyway.
What if he needs us?
Mam squeezes, trying to massage some of the tension away, but I'm wound like a clock spring.
Then he'll need a better messenger than a couple of demon attacks and some old calling bones.
She's right. She's got to be. I ain't ready to live in a world where Mam could be wrong, and there's no way for me to find my way down to that place without her. I nod, wiping a tear from my eye with the cuff of my shirt.
Ain't gonna be long, Mam says. Really is just a mimic?
Miss Prissy Perfect and I should be able to handle it without much fuss and be back in a few weeks.
And if it's more?
I ask. Mam shrugs.
Going in heavy. There's a fight. It won't end well for the demons.
I don't want to stay here, I say. Can't you skate me home to the brook before you go?
You're asking to skate.
Mam's eyes narrow.
Olive and Selen treating you so bad?
I shake my head. They're fine, just don't fit in here.
Oh, I get that, Mam says.
But demons got too close to your granddad's farm for my liking. Until this business is settled, Hollow's the safest place. Your Uncle Garrett will take good care of you, and maybe you and Selen will get a chance to sneak another kiss. I look up at her, unable to hide my shock, and she throws me a wink.
Thought I didn't know about that. You two behave.
I feel my face heat, and Mam laughs, hugging me tight and kissing the curly hair atop my head.
Love you, Darren Bales.
Love you, Mam.
Selen and Olive find me atop the parapet wall as I watch the carts and horses recede in the distance from the shadows of my warded cloak's hood.
A week since the bet, Olive is painting her face again, but the smells of her various perfumes are preferable to the slowly fading stench of the convoy.
Ready to head over to Da's manse?
Selen asks.
I can ask the porters to pack your one dirty shirt and overalls.
Don't bother, Olive says.
The staff gave up trying to wash them and just set them aflame. I was wondering what that stink was,
Selen cries. Both girls squeal with laughter, and I wonder how long it would take me to get back to Tibbetts Brook if I set off at a run. The trip takes a messenger on horseback 2 weeks, but I reckon I could beat that. I don't know if the servants burned my clothes, but the moment I stepped into a tub, they made off with them, leaving behind a robe and some underclothes to wear as the Duchess's tailors ambushed me. Ran their tape so far up my leg I thought they were going to wipe my bottom. I tried to stuff my hands in my pockets, but for some reason my new pants don't have any. The ones on my jacket are too small to put anything of use in. Feel like I'm the one lost a bet. Got suede and velvet for every occasion now, and not a thing that's comfortable. Creator be praised, Selen says. You'll need your fanciest for 6 day supper tonight with the general. Selen's casual accent switches to the stuffy Angerian court speech Harry puts on when he wants to sound officious. The Baroness requires formal dress at the 6 day table. Seating is promptly at 6. Do not be late. Supper shall continue until the General and the Baroness get too drunk to be civil. Guy, I put up my hands as Olive laughs. Never agreed to that. I've got a choice, Selen says. Don't like it any more than you, but Dad's been looking forward to this all week. Won't kill you to eat with us on 6 days. It's not like Amelia wants me around any more than that anyway. You and your stepmom still don't get on, I ask. Get on with the living embodiment of the scandal that soured her marriage before it even began, Selen asks. She hates 6 day dinner even more than I do. Selen lays a hand on my shoulder. Even through my suede jacket and silk shirt, I can feel its warmth. Hoping you'll sit between us and turn slippery. She doesn't like me either, I say. Aye, but scratching at you is asking for a visit from Mrs. Bales. And even the Baroness ain't stupid enough to tempt that. She squeezes my shoulder and looks me in the eyes. Please? My knees weaken, but I make my voice gruff. Fine. Selen lets out a squeal and hugs me. Apologies now for my brothers. In truth, I can handle the Baroness and Selen's half-brothers just fine. It's Uncle Garrod that makes me uncomfortable. I hate it when Dad's old friends want to look at me. Always searching for something exceptional, something of the great man they knew, in his only son. I can smell their disappointment when they can't find anything. Can we get off this wall now? Olive asks. The wind is ruining my hair. We walk down to the yard and back into the residence, where I split off to gather the few things left in my room to bring to General Cutter's manse. They wait till I turn a corner down the hall, but I can still hear the girls talking. You've got a dinner date with Darren Bales. Olive's sing-song voice is cut off by the sound of Selen shoving her. Oh, aye, Selen says. Real romantic. Dad getting drunk while Amelia and her mother snipe at us, and my brothers bark and pee the carpet. Olive laughs. No way you can get out of it. It's all Dad's been talking about, Selen says. The General swears Arlen Bales was the deliverer, and to him that makes Darren half-deliverer too. Be good for Dad to see he's just some dirty bumpkin. Mam says my special senses are a gift, but there are times when I truly hate them. Night, Selen declares when I open the door. Took me an hour to make sense of all the buckles, laces, buttons, knots and cuffs of the dinner clothes the servants laid out, but it's worth it to see her breath catch. You weren't spinning stories about the tailors, Selen says. They cleaned you up good. I smile with more teeth than strictly necessary. Wouldn't want your dad to look at me and think I'm just some dirty bumpkin. Heard all that, did you? I feel the flush as Selen's face heats. She's ashamed, at least. I want to stay mad, but she ain't making it easy. Used to seeing Selen in leggings or a wide-skirted court dress. Now she's clad in a dark blue velvet gown that accents her height and muscular frame. It hugs tight around her ribs, leaving her broad shoulders bare. Her arms are thicker than mine. She's even let Olive paint her lips and pin her hair, though the bet's long over. She's beautiful. Try as I might, I can't stop thinking about the last summer I spent in Hollow. Folk gossip that I kissed her, but truer was, Selen did the kissing and I just melted in her arms. Every time I see her, I wonder if she's going to do it again. Hear everything, I say. There are 7 servants bustling around the supper table downstairs. 2 are out of breath. 1 maid's trying to hide a sniffle. Butler has a loose heel on his shoe that clacks when he walks. So no one's got any privacy? That it? Selen asks. Better not have gas on the privy.
Darren's always listening.
Ain't like I got a choice. I'm irritated at her attempt to turn it back on me. Sometimes I can filter out all the sounds and smells. Sometimes I can. Why should I have to? So folk can insult me when I'm not around. Selen crosses her thick arms. Would have said those exact words to your face, Darren Bales, and you know it. That's supposed to make it better. I scoff. Never say things like that to you. That's because you ain't got a sense of humour. Selen winks. Don't forget who wagered you into having to paint your face, I say. And don't fool yourself. Master Harry says, mean's an easy shortcut to a laugh. But it ain't comedy. Fun, though. Selen's mouth quirks in a smile that threatens to make me forget why I was angry. Don't be mad, Darren. 3 of us have been throwing shadow at each other since we were in nappies. Ain't the time to get all sensitive. She senses my weakness, threading her arm through mine. I try to pull away, but it's a token effort, and she knows it. You just want me as a shield against your stepmom.
Aye.
Selen starts guiding me down the hall to the stair. But it ain't like you've got anything better to do. Selen's 3 brothers are loitering outside the dining room, like a cluster of goldwood trees. I've got 2 summers on the oldest, Steve Cutter, but he's been a head taller than me since we were out of nappies. At 13, he's closing on 6 feet with no sign of stopping. I could still look down at Garrett Young at my last visit, but he has inches on me now. Even Flynn, 6 summers behind, can look me straight in the eye.
Aye, would you look at that?
Steve looks me up and down as Selen and I join them.
You get shorter, Bales.
He stinks a challenge. Every time I visit Hollow, Steve tries to pick a fight. Sometimes it's words, and sometimes it's physical, but he's always trying to get a rise out of me so he can establish dominance in front of his brothers. More than once when we were kids, I had to put him on the floor. Now, after putting on 5 summers and 30 pounds in muscle, he looks eager to make up the loss. It's all so primitive. Boring. Fighting Uncle Garrett's boys ain't worth the hassle. Easier to just let Steve look big in front of his brothers. I smile as they cluster in like a pack of night wolves.
Never seem to get as much rain and sunshine as you Cutters. All shot up, ain't you?
Selen steps in front of me. Her scent is sharp with anger, but her words are almost sing-song.
Steve's just sour that his sister beat the snot out of him in the practice yard the other day.
You cheated,
Steve growls. But a current of fear has slipped into his challenge scent. Selen gives a derisive snort.
Aye, that's why you went one around against me your whole life.
Garrett Young and Flynn snicker at that, and the moment diffuses. If the Cusher boys are night wolves, Selen has always been their alpha.
Look pretty tonight, sis.
Steve changes tactics, and I can smell Selen's irritation. She doesn't like being dressed up any more than I do, and Steve knows it. She looks ready to put him down right in the hall before 6-day dinner. He takes a step back as she advances, and she pulls up short with a laugh. Flynn and Garrett Young laugh along, but Steve smells angry, and it's building. He's about to do something stupid to save face.
Darren!
Uncle Garrett booms from down the hall, breaking the tension. More than 7 feet tall, he towers over everyone, including his children. But out of the wooden armour he wears almost everywhere, Garrett Cutter looks older than I remember. His coat buttons strain against a rounded belly, and there are thick jowls beneath his grey beard.
Creator, it's good to have you under my roof again.
I suck in a bit as the general claps me on the shoulder. It's all that keeps him from knocking me over.
See, you're catching up with the boys.
Aye, sir, I say. Thank you for offering succour while Mam is away.
Oh, least I could do,
he says.
And never mind all that sir business. Used to call me Uncle Gar when you were still a sapling. No, we ain't blood, but you're as good as. Ever tell you about the time your mum carried me on her back out of a demon ambush?
Only every time you see him. Selin stands on tiptoes to kiss her father on the cheek.
It's a good story,
he says.
Aye, I agree. But the way Mam tells it, Half Grip saved you both that day.
Roger Inn, the famous jongleur known as Half Grip, has always been a hero of mine. He was the first person in thousands of years to charm Corlings with his music, a skill that saved countless lives during the war, even after his death.
Honest word.
Garrett smells sad and proud.
Don't think any of us would have survived that attack otherwise. Hear you're a bit of a demon charmer yourself with those pipes.
My mind flashes back to the attack. My sweaty fingers slipping on the reeds, unable to hold the Corlings back. Nothing as special as that, sir. Uncle Gar.
Indeed,
a woman's voice says.
It would take a swollen head for a boy to claim he's the next fiddle wizard.
I look up and see Lady Lacquer, Selin's step-grandmother, enter the room. Baroness Amelia close behind.
Welcome, Darren.
The Baroness's words and smile are warm, but her scent is derisive as she takes my arms and kisses the air to either side of my face. Her eyes flick over Selin like a pile of dung she needs to step around.
Selin, your face looks lovely. You should powder it more often.
Baroness? Lady Lacquer? Selin's curtsy is perfect as a dancer's. But if her scent was irritated before, it's inflamed now. Like Steve, the Baroness knows she's struck a nerve and smells of smug satisfaction. The Baroness turns to regard the General.
Husband, you look ready to pop your buttons. Shall I have the tailors let your coat out? Again?
Uncle Garrett doesn't growl precisely, but I feel the low rumble inside him, even if the others don't. His face reddens, just slightly, but he ignores the question.
All here, so let's sit. For some reason, I'm suddenly thirsty.
Indeed, the servants have already poured for the adults. A massive wooden mug, crackling with foaming ale, sits by Uncle Garrett's place at the table's head, waiting in Baroness Amelia's place at the foot. As far from her husband as possible, is a large wine glass, overfilled with a red so deep its scent is like sandpaper in my sinuses. We circle the table. Steve, Garrett Young, and Flynn, crowding on one side, with Selin, myself, and Lady Lacquer on the other.
Sit,
the General commands, and a servant slides my chair forward until the edge touches the back of my knees. I drop down into it, wondering why they think we need help to sit down. The Baroness reaches for her napkin, opening it with a snap and laying it across her lap. The rest of us follow along. Dinner starts off well enough. There are a few fancy Angerian dishes for the Baroness and her mother. These the chefs introduce personally, listing every ingredient, though I hardly see why. The flavours of the food are drowned in sauces and seasoning. The General and his children favour simpler dishes. Meat still moist in its own juices and plain grilled vegetables. While the Baroness and her mother debate which slice of cheese will best complement a particular bread, the rest of us are holding bones and sticky fingers, rending the meat with our teeth as we laugh at Uncle Garrett's stories.
Buried my axe in the wood demons behind, but it gets stuck, and the woody jerks it out of my hands, knocking me sprawling.
Uncle Garrett waves his third mug, splashing a bit of ale.
The thing starts beating me with its great club arms.
He pounds his fist on the table, then the mug, with another splash, then his fist again.
but I can still see my axe, hanging between its legs like a ripping tail. I laugh so hard I nearly choke on my water. All the children are howling. So I take the hits, bide my time, then reach right between the demon's legs. Uncle Garrod sweeps an arm out, splashing yet more ale, and one of the brass buttons on his jacket pops free with an audible rip, bouncing and rolling along the table towards the Baroness. Steve points, and he and his brothers howl anew. Even Uncle Garrod starts to laugh, until Baroness Amelia gives an audible sniff. I told you your clothes need letting out. If you're determined to keep getting fatter, you might need a new wardrobe entirely.
Just a ripping button.
This time Uncle Garrod really does growl, irritated at having his story derail right at the climax.
Ripping is right,
Lady Lacker says, and both women titter.
What was it Duchess Arane told you at your bachelor's ball?
Amelia asks.
No one respects a fat man on a throne.
Steve breaks the tension before she can retort.
I want to hear about the warded children.
I look up to see him staring right at me and wonder if he's smarter than he lets on, deflecting attention from his father.
You live with them, aye, Darren?
Some of the time. I don't trust Steve. He might protect his dad, but he's always poking at me.
It's true they ward their peckers?
Steve asks, sending Garrod, Young, and Flynn into peals of laughter. Uncle Garrod swats Steve on the back of his head. I don't think it was meant to cause real harm, but he's a big man, and Steve is knocked face first into the table with an audible thump. He looks up at his father, more betrayed than hurt, and the general balls a fist in response.
Serves you right. Show some coarse-born respect.
Steve immediately bows his head.
Aye, sir. Sorry, sir.
Sorry about that, Darren,
Uncle Garrod says. Thought my boys would have more sense, but I guess they needed beat into them.
It's nothing.
I look at Steve with a grin. Only knew one man who warded his pecker. Folks said he put impact wards around the tip. The Cutter boys look awestruck at my words, and even Uncle Garrod gapes.
Did that work?
Search my pockets,
I tell him. Wasn't able to find anyone willing to try it out. Ella says all it's good for now is drilling holes in trees. The general roars with laughter, pounding the table. His boys follow along, as much to please their father as at the joke.
Steve, go sit with your sister a spell,
Uncle Garrod says.
Darren, come sit by me.
Everyone stops laughing at that. Amelia stiffens, and even Selen sucks in a breath. Steve complies, glaring daggers at me as we switch places. Uncle Garrod seems not to notice, leaning in and fixing me with that probing stare I've come to hate, trying desperately to see something of Arlen Bales in me. But whatever it is he's looking for isn't there. Maybe my dad was something special, but I ain't. At last, the general grunts and leans back.
Remind me more of Roger than your dad, I'm to give honest word.
I don't know how to answer that, looking back uncomfortably until Selen clears her throat.
Met one of the warded children on the borough tour, she notes. You mean when you stole armour from your father's soldiers and snuck off, putting your and Princess Olive's lives at risk?
The Baroness holds out her empty glass, and a servant is quick to refill it.
Aye, that.
Selen's eyes flick to her father. When he raises no protest, she continues on.
Saw a fighter calling barehanded.
She has her brother's full attention now, and takes her time reeling them in.
Did you really see a demon?
Flynn's eyes are wide.
Saw a lot more than one,
Selen says.
Whole camp was overrun.
What were they like?
Garrod Young is no less entranced than his younger brother.
Tough, Selen says. Bashed one with my shield.
hard as can be, and barely fazed it.
Did you kill any?
Arlen asks. Selen shrugs. Got in a few hits. But they heal fast. Stabbed a rock demon in the chest. After... She smells, suddenly unsure. No doubt realizing she was about to mention Mika. Someone took it in the knee. Wasn't alone, though. Took more than a few spears to put it down for good.
Meant an easy thing to do, standing tall to Talon with a rocky.
General's voice is gruff, but he smells of pride.
Don't encourage her foolishness, Garrod.
The Baroness snips.
Ain't encouraging?
Uncle Garrod holds up his hands.
Girl knows how I feel about what she done. Just saying it's tricky. Putting your spear between a rock armor's plates.
I'm sure she did no such thing,
Lady Lacker says.
These children likely saw one demon and are spinning it into the Battle of Cutter's Hollow. There aren't enough callings left to cause that kind of trouble.
For once, I'm the one who wants to fight. This spoiled old woman's probably never seen a demon in her life, but she's calling Selen a liar. I open my mouth to retort, but Selen beats me to it. Tell that to the parents of the kids who are cored.
Plenty of demons left off the great words,
I add before the other end of the table can volley. Dad. My throat goes suddenly tight. When he... An image flashes in my mind. Dad, trapped, burning in the core, screaming my name. Everyone is looking at me. How long since I trailed off? I force out the rest of my thought.
It was just the ones laying siege on the cities that were destroyed. Boy's right, Mum.
Uncle Garrod's tone is respectful, but firm.
This is not a subject for debate. Lot of witnesses giving the same story you just heard from Selen.
He takes the heavy serving spoon to scoop potatoes onto his plate.
Leisha wouldn't have gone to investigate if it weren't serious.
Weren't serious, Amelia says.
Aye.
Garrod pauses mid-scoop.
Weren't.
Not
weren't,
she says. If things were truly dire, you'd think Duchess Leisha would have sent her best general. The pause isn't long, but we all feel it. Instead, you'll be sitting for her at court.
What will people say when they hear the Baron of Cutter's Hollow still speaking like some backwards bumpkin?
I feel the flush of heat as the general's face reddens. His scent is angry. Dangerously so, though the Baroness looks anything but frightened.
They'll say I was the first to answer the Deliverer's call,
Uncle Garrod says.
Say I stood in the Calling's graveyard when the Hollow lost its feet. Say I held back a horde at the Dividing.
He clutches the heavy silver serving spoon in his fist.
Say I got to be Baron with blood and ichor and my own coarse-born hands, not by talking like ripping city folk.
His thumb bends the thick metal spoon like it was nothing. That gets his attention. He stares down at the spoon, breathing deeply. He tries to bend it back to its original shape, but the implement is hopelessly mangled. Turning his attention back to the potatoes, he starts furiously scooping food onto his plate with it anyway. I feel terrible for him. For all of them, really. This isn't what family is supposed to be. But there is an uneasy silence at the table now, and everyone seems to prefer it that way. I focus on my own potatoes instead.
Like that every time?
I ask as Selen walks me back to my room. Same scene every 6 days, Selen says.
Dan and Amelia cut at each other until one of them, usually Dan, starts shouting and breaks something.
All the while, my brothers drool and chase attention like a pack of hounds. Why does she hate him so much? I ask.
Because he didn't have claim to me,
Selen says. I was the Duchess's sister, and Alona's still married to Leisha's dad. He could have just let it be, but he didn't. I don't think she'll ever forgive that. No wonder you live in the Duchess's keep, I say. Da wants me here full time, Selen says. But every time I stay more than a few days, Amelia gets jealous he's paying attention to me instead of the boys. Does her best to make my life a misery, so I keep away. We reach the door to my room, but Selen makes no move to continue on as I stop. She's looking at me in that way she has, and I wonder if she's going to kiss me again. Is it wrong to be excited? She might. I need to force my frozen lungs to breathe. Olive would throw a fit. She saw us like this. Selen's scent is predatory. Like what? I'm barely listening, just staring into her eyes like a mouse before a snake. Alone in a dim hallway, dressed in our 6-day best. I tense as Selen squeezes my arm, grateful she can't smell my fear. Well, why should Olive care? I ask. I tense as Selen leans close, dropping her voice to a whisper. Amelia's not the only one who gets jealous. Of me or you? I drop my voice to match, though we're alone in the hall. Selen's eyebrows knit, and her mouth puckers. Now that you mention it, maybe a bit of both. She wouldn't talk to me for a week after we kissed.
What?
I squeak. Why would she do that? Olive doesn't shine on me. For a boy who can count heartbeats 2 floors down, you don't catch much, Selen says. Everything the 3 of us did back then, we did together. But that was something she wasn't part of. She didn't stop talking to me, I say.
Of course not, dummy,
Selen snaps. She was trying to get you alone.
Now I'm completely lost. Why?
Selen steps closer. I can feel her warmth in the air between us. To get her kiss? So would it all be even again? She lays a hand on my chest, looking at me with a mischievous smile. Who knows what she'd do now? She leans in, and I close my eyes. I feel her breath as she puts her lips to my ear. So we'd best behave. Her hand lifts from my chest, and I feel her step away. I open my eyes and she flashes me a bright smile.
At least for tonight.
She winks and turns to walk swiftly down the hall.
Good night, Darren.
I watch until she turns the corner, then rush into my room and put my back to the door as I wait for my breathing to return to normal. I realise I forgot to say goodnight in return.